Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. It's spring break week, and today we hear about one of the most popular local destinations during spring break, the Tulsa Zoo. Lots of new attractions are opening this week, including the Robert J. LaFortune Wildlife Trek, a renovation of the former North American Living Museum that opened to the public this week. Also, a new exhibit of African painted wild dogs also opened. And ground was broken on the first new project of the Tulsa Zoo's 20-year master plan, a new enclosure and exhibit for the zoo's white rhinos. Today we'll talk with Terry Correll, the executive director of the Tulsa Zoo Friends, about the new exhibits, as well as the 20-year master plan and what it means for the future of the Tulsa Zoo. Terry Correll is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Terry Correll, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, the first parts of the 20-year master plan for the Tulsa Zoo are beginning to take shape, and if people go out to the zoo during this spring break week, they're going to see a lot of new things at the zoo, including a renovation of what used to be the Robert LaFortune Living Museum, the North American exhibits. You've totally changed those around.
Yeah, we've changed them up a little bit. We kept the themes of coal, desert, water, and forest, but instead of just interpreting North American animals, we decided that we would open that up and look at animal adaptations from around the world for deserts or cold or the water. So that allowed us to bring in new species to the zoo that we haven't had before, such as naked mole rats, or we've been able to display our seahorses, which were in the basement in our conservation building. So it's quite exciting.
So give us a sense, as you know, most people, I think when they go to the zoo, that's sort of the place they gravitate first, is through those buildings. Tell us what we'll see new in, say, the Arctic building.
Well, one of the biggest change in the Arctic building, or what we're calling now Life in the Cold, is the public will come to that building and they'll see an immersive grizzly bear exhibit. And Akoya, who we've had for a couple of years from Wyoming, she was one of those three-strike bears that we got. And she has been introduced into this new exhibit, and she loves to lay in front of the big view window where people can engage her up close and come face to face with a grizzly bear. She spends a lot of time.
In a safe way, yes.
She spends a lot of time on the rock formation in her exhibit in full view of visitors. So we're quite excited that we've got an immersive exhibit that the visitor sees right when they come into the zoo. Mm-hmm. And as they wander through, we have chinchillas in the cold building. They're cold weather animals from South America. We also will wind through the desert building where you would see naked mole rats. And into the water building, we have seahorses, a lot of new fish displays. And then finally, when you get into the forest building, there's tree shrews, along with some favorites like our porcupines.
Mm-hmm. And I would assume a lot of the big species that's been a part of those buildings for a long time are still there.
Sure.
As well.
We still have our white-tailed deer, turkeys. We still have our swift fox. There's a lot of North American animals still in those buildings. We just mixed it up a little bit so we could talk about animal adaptations to those geographic regions from a global perspective.
And the old Living Museum really had an anthropological feel to it, and really you're focusing now on zoology.
We're focusing on the animals and their adaptations. People, when they come to the zoo, they really want to see animals, and this just gave us an opportunity to put in new exhibits and kind of take a fresh look at those buildings. They were built in late 70s, early 80s, and so it was time for renovation, and we still have some things that we still want to add to that in a second phase, so we'll be working on those over the next few years.
What would the second phase look like?
For instance, we were taking a look at other species that we still would like to acquire, like wolves. We're talking about Mexican wolves, which is an endangered species of wolf. There's a captive breeding program for this species, and working with zoos and with Fish and Wildlife Service, where zoos have been able to offer animals back up for reintroduction. So that would allow us to look at those kind of animals that we want to still bring back to the zoo.
Now, I mentioned, as I said, that there's a lot of things going on at the zoo, and you're also adding an animal that is part of this 20-year master plan in, what is it called, the African
Plains.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And that will be African dogs.
Yes. We've had African painted dogs since late last fall. They've been in holding while we've renovated our cheetah exhibit for these dogs. They're a unique species of wild dog. They're the second most endangered carnivore in Africa after the Ethiopian wolf. So we're excited to have them. It's three young females, all sisters. Eventually we'll be acquiring males, and hopefully we will end up with a breeding group.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be, from what I hear you say over and over, this is an immediate goal, really, to be a captive breeder so that you're perpetuating a lot of these endangered species.
Sure. We want to begin to participate more in conservation breeding programs and captive breeding programs, and linking captive populations to supporting conservation work in the field. And when people come to the zoo, it allows us to talk about not only the animals at the zoo, but how zoos are helping animals in the wild through supporting conservation programs. And hopefully we can inform our visitors and guests and have them take away some thoughts and ideas, and maybe they too will support some of these programs.
Mm-hmm. Now, that is not the only thing you'll see at the zoo. There will be also a new construction area.
Right. We broke ground. We did a ceremonial groundbreaking for our new Mary Kay Chapman Rhino exhibit. We will be starting to turn earth right after spring break, and our rhinos will
be about the same place where the rhinos used to be?
No, they'll actually go over next to the giraffe area.
Okay.
We're incorporating the existing antelope and zebra and Cape Buffalo exhibits, and expanding that area and turning that into the new rhinoceros exhibit. It will also feature other antelope species, as well as possibly zebras again, if not plain zebra, perhaps in the future grevy zebra. We'll mix bird species in as well, and there'll be an area where the keepers can do a rhino keeper chat, because people are really thrilled to be able to get up close and we offer the public a brush with the keeper. They can scratch the rhinos, and
oh, wow.
We do that a lot with our behind-the-scenes tours, where we're actually creating an area now where we can do keeper chats and have the public engage in a little more personal way with rhinos.
And see sort of the maintenance things that are involved.
Sure.
In keeping the animal in good health.
Mm-hmm. And the new rhino exhibit will be a 3-acre facility that'll feature the yard and the barn. The barn will be a boma style, which is round, and it'll feature six stalls inside, and there'll be some soft flooring in some of the stalls. And the best thing is that in the wintertime there'll be a day view window, so the public will be able to see the rhinos when they're out visiting the zoo in the wintertime.
And what's the timeline for construction on this?
It'll take about a year, so we hope to open up prior to spring break next year. That's our timeline right now.
My guest today is Terry Correll, the executive director of the Tulsa Zoo Friends. And the Tulsa Zoo is opening new exhibits. They're renovating others. They're starting construction on new projects that are within the zoo's 20-year master plan. That's the reason we had her on today, not only because you might want to plan a trip during spring break this week, but also because the zoo is really starting to make progress on this new 20-year master plan, which was implemented, put into place, about 2 years ago? Or?
It's been about a year ago. That we had approval. The process started about 2 years ago, and the Rhino exhibit actually launches the start of the master plan. That's the first exhibit that was designated to be done in our master plan.
The master plan really is focusing a lot on African. Of course, that's the animals that people probably most want to see. But give us a sense of various areas that are part of this 20-year master plan.
Part of the areas in the master plan will be the African Plains giraffe experience, but also we will transform our children's zoo area into an exhibit called Sheepy Hollow. We will expand the sea lion area into wild islands that features not only our sea lions and flamingos. But
a little bit of a water play experience
for kids. It'll
be water
play experience, absolutely, along with other island species. We'll move our Aldabra tortoises there. We'll have a new lemur exhibit. And then we will also have a new African forest area, which will be a new area for our chimpanzees, and that will set the stage for gorillas in the future.
Now, let's talk about that last area first. The chimpanzee exhibit is really it's quite nice now. So, are you going to use the existing area as sort of the beginnings of a larger area, or are you making a whole new exhibit?
We'll use the existing structure and then renovate it for African forests and expand it. The public side of the exhibit looks in good shape, but the back of the house is in need of a little work. And the Chimp Island itself was, if I'm remembering correctly,
it's really old.
I think in the 70s. And so, if you take a closer look at the moat wall, it's crumbling, and we're needing to go in and do some stopgap fixes until we can get that taken care of. And the biggest thing, though, is that having a water moat for chimpanzees is a very old style of keeping chimpanzees. We don't do that in exhibit design anymore because of the precaution that we have to make sure that the animals don't get in the water and drown. Primates, chimps, like people, they have to be taught how to swim. And so now when new chimpanzee exhibits are built, they're not built with water moats.
So you'll change the outdoor viewing
area?
Sure,
it'll change.
And what are some of the other animals that will be a part of this African forest?
Well, that'll set the stage for gorillas. It won't be done. It'll with the chimp exhibit, it will set it up when we lay it all out for the gorilla exhibit to come later. But we would look at other African forest species, birds, smaller mammals that we would want to put near the chimp exhibit and make it a more immersive experience, like our Lost Kingdom tiger, which is the next exhibit that will be coming up after Rhino. And that's the one we're actively fundraising for now.
Right. And this is, I guess, going to be near the elephant area?
Yes, it will be. It will feature our Malayan tigers, snow leopards, our Komodo dragons, along with a bird species.
Yeah, last time I checked the zoo, and I haven't been out there in a little while, but those were all spread out all over the zoo.
Yes, they are. They're all spread out. The large carnivores are still, the lions and tigers are still in the old 60s style rock grotto moated exhibits. State of the art in the early 60s, but no longer.
So you'll have Malaysian tigers, and what is Komodo dragons?
Komodo dragon.
And these will be the sort of the featured
species. The
iconic
feature species, along with our snow leopards. Mm-hmm. Those are the three big exhibits there. And then we'll be taking our siamangs that are currently on the island next to the chimps and moving them over to that area, to the Siamang exhibit. And the best thing, in addition to these immersive naturalistic settings, we're creating areas for people to view these animals in the wintertime, because that's often what happens when guests come out when it's cooler in the late fall, winter. Many of the species are indoors where they're not able to be viewed by the public. So unless you're a snow leopard, you don't get out too much in the wintertime.
And I would assume that in making these indoor atmospheres, they're going to look like very naturalistic.
They'll look like for instance, in our rhino area, it'll give us a chance to show what the inside of the barn looks like and talk about, you know, the big stall and perhaps how we manage the animals and how state-of-the-art the barn is. And some of the areas, it could, you know, as we plan, it could be some naturalistic rock work. And others, it'll just be the interior of a state-of-the-art back-of-the-house facility. And people love seeing that kind of thing. They want to know how you're managing the animals and what you do and how state-of-the-art it will look.
Well, my guest today, Terry Correll of the Tulsa Zoo, which is opening new exhibits, starting constructions on new projects within the zoo's 20-year master plan. Talking a little bit about that 20-year master plan. You mentioned that The Rhino enclosure is the first project of this 20-year master plan. The Asian area will probably be the – well, now you're looking at a full-scale Asian or just the tiger area?
Well, the Lost Kingdom tiger, it's a complex of exhibits that includes the tiger, snow leopards.
Your Asian elephant.
Asian species, the Komodo dragon. It'll be placed near the elephants. In our master plan, we do have plans to, at some point later in the master plan towards the end, where we will go in and give a facelift to and expand our elephant area as well. So when it's all incorporated together, it will be a large Asian complex of exhibits.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, when you look at the last of the biosystems that you built, the wonderful Central American
rainforest.
Uh-huh. You know, you have this big building. I guess it sounds like these new projects will be a little different, and there'll be a series of buildings that will sort of be connected together.
One of the things that the master plan does is it creates zones within the zoo, and for instance, the Asian section, the Lost Kingdom section, or the Wild Islands, or the African forests, and then we will, and then the North American area that we've turned into Wildlife Trek. All these areas will be streamlined with pathways as we go in and begin to address the new exhibits, taking care of some of the failing infrastructure that we have. That's how we will address it through these new exhibits. We'll streamline the wayfinding for our guests, and it'll be a much more cohesive walk through the zoo, along with a lot more guest amenities, food, more restrooms, more gift opportunities. The Sheepy Hollow will have the children's area will have a one-way in, one-way out, so parents, grandparents can sit and watch their children play in a totally safe manner. And so we're very excited to be able to take the zoo and just give it a new footprint.
You mentioned the new children's area. This is for a lot of zoos. That's one of the big reasons people bring their kids to the zoo. And the Tulsa Zoo over the past has had varying success with their children's area. So what are you going to try to do to make it a primary attraction?
Well, one of the things that we're planning for is to have a very whimsical, anything kind of goes atmosphere, more sort of like an Alice in Wonderland experience, if I could describe it, where we would have animals from all over the world that would be put into the children's zoo, Sheepy Hollow, where kids and parents, grandparents can explore together and just learn about different animals from around the world. For instance, one of the species may be tree kangaroos. People don't think about kangaroos living in trees, but there actually are kangaroos that live in trees. And so it'll be things that people maybe don't think about that we'll be able to incorporate into this new area for discovery and learning.
All right. And beyond the different species, are you like you'll have the typical tactile experiences,
sure.
Feeding experiences,
sure.
Things like that?
We'll maintain an area where kids can get close to animals and be able to touch an animal or see an animal up close. There'll be opportunities for keeper chats for staff and our educators to engage kids and parents, because kids don't know how to be outside anymore.
Some don't. Yeah, that's true.
We spend a lot of time in front of our computer, our cell phone, our TV, our video game, and so I think coming to the zoo is a real opportunity for people to have an outdoor experience and look at and view and learn about animals. They can ride a train. During spring break this week, we have other activities. We have inflatables for kids to come in and jump on and slides. And so there's just a lot going on at the zoo. Rock walls for kids to climb on. So we want to get kids not only outside and learning about animals, but we want to get kids outside and learning about how to be outside and having fun and maybe getting a little exercise too.
Now, the one area we really haven't talked about is centered around the new Helmerich Sea Lion Cove. Mm-hmm. Now, explain what this is going to be. Is this going to be more aquatic animals, or is really the sea lion – exhibit sort of the centerpiece for a water experience for the kids, or both?
It's both. Helmerich Sea Lion Cove is the first exhibit that is in Wild Islands. And so eventually we'll add more sea lions to that exhibit. And then we will build Wild Islands around that exhibit, which will have the water play. So it'll become part of Wild Islands.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a sense of what it's going to look like at the end of it?
Well, at Wild Islands, the focal point, I think, will be sea lions will certainly be one of the anchor exhibits in there, but I think the water play itself will be an anchor exhibit activity for people, because parents, you know, in July and August when it's hot, can come out to the zoo, and water play will be there for kids, get a chance to run around and cool off. There'll be guest amenities there for parents to sit and enjoy while the children play and
that's
water.
That's one of the drawbacks of where we are in this country, because really we have two shoulder seasons. We have spring, we have fall, mm-hmm. and that height of the summer, which in northern latitudes, that's primary zoo time. People don't want to come out to the zoo when it's 110.
They don't, and we want to give them a reason to come out to the zoo when it's 110, and adding water play and water features will do that.
My guest today, Terry Correll of the Tulsa Zoo Friends, as the Tulsa Zoo embarks on their 20-year master plan, breaking ground on the very first construction project of that 20-year plan, the White Rhino new exhibit, and have just renovated the La Fortune buildings, and it's called the Wildlife Trek now.
It's called the Robert J. La Fortune Wildlife Trek. And so the theme is that you trek through these four geographic regions around the world and learn about animals and their adaptations.
Yeah, and that just opened. And you also have new African wild dogs on display as well.
Yes, we do.
Now, it's also been just a year or so, a couple of years since the zoo has sort of switched its management system to the – how is that working out?
It's working out well. We have a public-private partnership with the city of Tulsa, where Tulsa Zoo Management operates the zoo, and it's allowed us to go out into the donor community and fundraise in a more effective manner, and the city has been very supportive of our the zoo and of the partnership, and has been a good partner. So, right now, we're moving ahead and continuing to work and make that happen.
Now, the Zoo Friends have been around for a long time, mm-hmm. but it was like you had to raise some money and give it to the city, right?
Right.
And now you're managing the money yourself. Is that the biggest change? Other than the employees.
Sure.
I should mention the employees are a big part of the zoo.
Well, everybody works for the same organization now, so that's tremendous. And we share the same vision and mission for the zoo. So the zoo is in control of its own destiny, and that's been very, very good for the zoo. And so we were able to set our own priorities that the zoo needs to be set to operate the zoo in a professional manner, and that's what we're going about doing. You know, we had the master plan completed. That was part of our agreement with the city, and the next step was to begin to fundraise for that master plan. And so we are, continuing to look not only for private dollars, but as public funding opportunities arise as part of our agreement, we look for those as well.
All right. Well, it sounds like things are going pretty well.
Yes, they are.
All right. Well, new exhibits at the zoo this week. If you're out for spring break and wanting to take the kids somewhere, maybe the zoo is a great location. Terry, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome. I hope everyone can come out and see us this week. Thank you.
Terry Correll is the executive director of Tulsa Zoo Friends. The Tulsa Zoo open all week long during spring break, 9 to 5. For more information on the zoo and its new exhibits, visit their website at tulsazoo.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Connie Cronley.
Can't talk long, halfway out the door. On my way to a hookah lounge. What? You don't think I'm hip enough to go to a hookah lounge? Well, I worried about that myself. For starters, I didn't know what a hookah lounge is. Now, I see them popping up usually around colleges, but they sound illegal, don't they? Like opium den? But surely not, what with hookah painted in big letters outside. So I did some research. The smoke is inhaled through a long tube of a hookah pipe and passes through a water bowl to cool and purify it. Simple. In Southeast Asia, the hookah pipe is called a shisha. Elsewhere, it is called a hubble bubble. I'm not advocating hookah smoking or denouncing it. I'm reporting. As the saying goes, I'm not saying, I'm just saying. Hookah cafes are popular social places in the Arab world, and the first recorded mention of hookah was in Persia in the 1500s. The Brits discovered the pleasures of hookah during the British Raj colonial era in India in the late 1800s. The United States discovered hookah in the 60s and 70s, and now again. Here, an average pipe costs about $15 or $20 and lasts about 40 minutes. But in upscale lounges, the price can go up to $150. Usually, no alcohol or food is served in a hookah den, only soft drinks, tea, and coffee. So, armed with this information, I strolled into my neighborhood hookah lounge. I tell you, I was a bit disappointed with the decor. I had hoped the place would be dripping with Persian rugs and brightly colored satin pillows with tassels. I imagined I would sit cross-legged, puffing from an ornate water pipe and blowing out colored smoke rings like the caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland. Wrong. Wasn't like that, except for the water pipes. The hookah lounge itself was chock-a-block with low tables, sofas, and chairs. Comfortable but ordinary, like college apartments, I remember. I was there right after work, and the place was practically empty except for two very young men sitting in a corner. And I said to the waitress, "It's my first time here. Where do I sit and what do I do?" She guided me to ordering a mango-flavored tobacco. Then one of the young men came over and said, "If you're alone, would you like to join us?" Now, I've watched enough true crime TV shows to have second thoughts, but only for a split second. I jumped right into their party, and soon we were joined by the mother of one of the young men, a nurse who often works 36-hour shifts. She and her son meet weekly at the hookah lounge to spend time together. They said it's quieter than dinner out and costs about the same. The three of these people showed me the ropes, how to smoke and savor the flavored tobacco, how to lean back and relax and talk quietly, how to enjoy a cup of hot chai with the hookah. They told me that the place is completely different later at night, with music, lots of people, and sometimes belly dancers. What I liked best was the gentle smell of the tobacco. It clung to my clothes and to my hair, and I drove home thinking how nice and welcoming the three people had been, and how vaguely relaxed I felt, as if I'd shed a heavy coat. I drove home singing, "I'm hooked on hookah, and hookah's hooked on me." And then I got home, and everything changed. A call on my message machine was the veterinarian's office, saying they were closing for the day, and I had forgotten to pick up my cat. He'd have to spend the night there. Forgot my cat? Oh, egregious, slattern pet owner am I! The guilt kicked the hookah right out of me. Now I'm going to have to go back to the hookah lounge and begin my research all over again. I've taped a note to myself on the dashboard. Do not forget to pick up cat or dog.
When Connie Cronley isn't prowling the local hookah lounges, she's a freelance writer, the executive director of Iron Gate, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.